Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and guest co-host Josh Elliott Wolf here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And there continues to be a lot of reaction to Adam Foote as the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. I also threw out there that I'm going to be combing Hockey DB in those great Colorado Avalanche teams that Foote played on, and some not so great ones towards the end of his career as well, but a lot of good ones, and seeing who his guy, his offensive guy, maybe, or could be a defensive guy, is going to be. A lot of people texting in Peter Forsberg. That would be nice.
Sure.
Let's go. Swedish? Awesome. Whoa. Yeah, that was
in step.
That was extremely in step. Awesome player. Played with that edge. I don't know if Forsberg has any coaching experience.
I was looking, because I saw that name come in a lot. I was looking for any semblance of coaching experience, and I wasn't able to find any. Oh, you know what? Never mind. So I'm saying he doesn't have any, but you know what? That's okay, man. You got vibes. Peter Forsberg behind the bench?
Oh, man. Sure. You can't go wrong. Are you kidding me?
I'm fine with it.
Well, and it's like, did Sergei Gonchar have coaching experience? He might have. I don't know. But they brought him in.
I'm pretty sure he did in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you're right. He did. Dang it. But it's like, yeah, you're an awesome player. Come on in. Join the party. That's where I do think there's an element here, though, where Rick Tocchet, great playing career, Stanley Cup champion, international success with Canada, played the game in a very particular way, and different position and different profile, and obviously Foote never had the offensive numbers as a shutdown defenseman like Tocchet did, but similar in a lot of ways, like hard-nosed, impossible not to respect his playing career, successful at a team level, a big part of those teams and what he did. And it's the same thing with Sergei Gonchar. Now, he wasn't quite the same physical player, but a winning player when he played. And I think it's obvious that management, or it seems clear anyways to me, that management values that element of a coach having a resume that players can look at, and even if they don't remember watching him play, right? If they don't remember, you know, Adam Foote on the 2002 Olympic team, there's instant credibility to having that type of career in your past. So, you know, look, not every coach does. Obviously, some of the most successful coaches in the NHL don't have that profile, but I understand valuing that type of pedigree. Other people texting in, Adam Deadmarsh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Adam Foote also played in Columbus.
Columbus, yes.
He did. And I'm scrolling through the names. Sergei Fedorov played at the same time.
Let's go.
He was also a head coach in Moscow. Won a championship in the KHL as a head coach, though.
Imagine how sick it would be to have Sergei Fedorov on the coaching staff.
It'd be awesome.
That'd be so cool.
This is what we need to do.
That would be the sickest thing.
Like, I'm saying.
As a kid who grew up being like, did you know Sergei Fedorov not only plays forward, but he can play Norse-level defense? Yeah. He's a cheat code.
The thing that always blew my mind was that Fedorov, Bure, and McGillney played on a line together before they all came over. In Russia, they played on a line together. I was like, oh, man.
Sick.
I always put them together in NHL 94. I was like, this is going to rule. And it did. People texting Alex Tanguy. That's a good one, because he's an assistant coach with Detroit, I believe. But the one that's coming in the most is Milan Hayduk. Of course, one of the all-time Canucks killers.
Yeah.
So look, you can't beat him, join him. Bring him in. Someone puts in, he knows how to score goals in that building. That's true. And I love
that's
that.
That's his one thing.
I loved like, Adam Foote starting here. Off his presser being like, guys, remember when Joe Sakic used to just murder you?
Yeah. What was that?
Remember when Joe Sakic just absolutely crushed you?
Why would you let that happen?
Yeah.
Why would you guys allow him to do that?
That would have never
so
happened
good.
If I was coach back then.
The thing I liked, though, I think what he was trying to say was, okay, I was a visiting player. Obviously, they played a playoff series against the Vancouver Canucks, and you get a lot of hate. You get a lot of flack, right? The fans are angry. They're on you. But then I think what he was trying to say is he really realized what a great hockey market it is after he won gold with the 2002 team, and then there's people coming up and thanking him, right? To have that knowledge where, yeah, you're our rival, and we're ticked off when you beat us and you swept us in the playoffs, but we recognize what you do, what you did for our country. And I got where he was going. I just thought it was pretty funny.
He got there eventually. But at first I was like, oh, I don't know if this is the road you want to go down, buddy.
That was fantastic. Okay, now you brought it up with Drancer when we were chatting with him in the first segment. But I think if you had to just choose one answer, and I think there were more interesting things that he had to say that we can talk about. But if you had to just choose one answer from Adam Foote that you're going to focus on, that you're going to dig into a little bit here from that press conference, it would be his answer on Elias Pettersson. We referenced it, but just to refresh everyone exactly what he said, hear it in his own words. Here is Adam Foote on his relationship and how he's going to get the most out of Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, Petey and I had some pretty good discussions this year, and I really think he wants it, and I really think he knows what he has to do, and he's going to dial in, and he's got a great group around him supporting him and being a team for him. And I'm going to make sure that I have that conversation with him and we continue that relationship and I support him. I think with PD, just for him moving forward, I think just that support for him will really get him in a good place. And we're going to make sure that he understands that we're there for him and we'll do whatever it takes and have a great relationship.
So that's Adam Foote asked about Elias Pettersson. Again, as you knew he would be in his introductory press conference, probably the most pressing question, really, to hear from Adam Foote on. And you brought up the word support, how he went back to that idea of supporting the player. Towards the end there, he says, we're there for him. We're going to do whatever it takes to help him get back. He also, I think it's fair to say, gave a vote of confidence to Elias Pettersson, right? He knows what he has to do. He wants it. He understands that he has to put the work in. And I've been thinking about this a lot over the last 24 hours or so, right? This idea that, is Adam Foote the coach to get the most out of Elias Pettersson? Can Adam Foote fix Elias Pettersson? And I know I'm not the first person to make this point. That's beyond Adam Foote. And that's an unfair expectation to put on Adam Foote. I get that it's the coach's job to put your players in a position to succeed, and ultimately the coach is going to be judged on the success of the team. And if the star players aren't playing well, maybe it's primarily their fault, but ultimately it's going to rest with the coach. I understand that. I also just reject the notion that there's some secret string of coaching words that Adam Foote can whisper to Elias Pettersson and he's going to activate the Winter Soldier.
That'd be sick.
You know what I mean? That'd be sick. That'd be awesome.
From a book.
But I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think it was primarily a coaching issue or even secondarily maybe a coaching issue with Elias Pettersson last year. It has to start with Elias Pettersson. Now, I wonder what Adam Foote can change and maybe what he can have an impact on is that word you highlighted, support. Does Elias Pettersson feel supported and have the support he needs on whatever internal process he's going through to get back to that level? I think ultimately that's all we can ask of whoever had ended up as the head coach. But now that it's Adam Foote, expecting them to single-handedly change Elias Pettersson back to a 100-point effective two-way center is unrealistic for any coach in the NHL. Can you create the environment where Pettersson can put the work in and succeed? And I think that answer from Adam Foote, very telling about how he's viewing his relationship with Elias Pettersson and what his approach to Pettersson is going to be.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing you can do is do whatever is in your control to get Elias Pettersson back to where his game should be. And I do think from everything we've seen throughout Elias Pettersson's career, everything he's talked about, everything that people in the know have spoken about with Elias Pettersson, is he's not someone that seems to thrive on tough love. The opposite, in fact. He seems to flourish more when people are supporting him. And one thing Thomas Drance brought up was it's helpful to him to almost have someone to need to be relied on. And if Adam Foote can create that environment of hey, you're the guy and we're here to support you, but you are the guy and you have to be that guy because you're getting paid this much, so on. I do wonder if that's the environment that helps Elias Pettersson flourish. But you're right. At the same time, even as someone that completely believes in Elias Pettersson being able to bounce back, I would say I'm more optimistic than
definitely
a lot of our text line at times about Elias Pettersson.
Not that that's hard to do. It's a low bar.
It is. But even as someone who is optimistic, I still look at it like, man, you need to put in the work because this is on you. Like you can't have someone babysit you all off season. Like when people talk about like, oh, he needs to stay in Vancouver and do all his training here so that the team can watch him. It's like, yeah, that'd be great. But also at the same time, is that what you want from your highest paid player? There needs to be a level of trust.
Yes.
And needs to be a level of support. And that's why when Foot brings up supporting Elias Pettersson, I think that's incredibly crucial.
I do wonder also if Elias Pettersson, and this applies to a lot of players in the league, a lot of players in pro sports, a lot of teams, the new coach bump is real. We've seen it with Elias Pettersson. The transition from Travis Green to Bruce Boudreau. He started playing a lot better after a month or so of Bruce Boudreau. How much does just... It's obviously not an entirely different voice, but it's a different guy. It's a different guy who's in charge. You have a different relationship with them. How much does a clean start in that respect change things for Elias Pettersson? Does it serve as a bit of a wake-up call going to yet another new head coach in his career? And something else, you know, the dynamic I'm going to be fascinated to see play out here with Foot and Elias Pettersson. So I think it was Sat on the morning show today with Halford and Brough saying that, you know, one of Foot's roles as the assistant coach, and this is pretty common for assistant coaches, was being the player's guy, the supportive guy, the good cop in the mm-hmm. situation, right? And obviously with Elias Pettersson, that probably came up a lot, because guess what? A lot of people were pretty angry with Elias Pettersson, whether it was certain individual players who now play for the New York Rangers. Maybe it was the head coach.
Yeah. Carson Soucy?
That's right. They had to get rid of Carson Soucy for that reason. Maybe the head coach at times. There's probably a lot of times where Elias Pettersson felt, yeah, people are hard on me. And as Sat said, it was part of Adam Foote's job to be the good cop in that situation, to support him, to have that conversation after where, hey, I know it's coming across harsh. Here's what they're trying to do. We're trying to help you, that kind of thing. Was he able to build up a relationship with Pettersson through that? You always hear about when it's an assistant coach making the jump up to the head coach on the same team, that's actually one of the challenges. You go from being that guy to the person who's in charge, who has to make the unpopular decisions, who sometimes has to be a little tougher on the players. And that can be a hard transition to make. That's going to be a challenge for Adam Foote. But I do wonder if in this situation, that's almost a benefit for him with Pettersson specifically. You know what I mean? The fact that he's already developed the good cop side of things with Pettersson, does that give him a leg up where somebody else coming in fresh as a head coach wouldn't be able to develop that relationship with Elias Pettersson? I wonder if what's typically a weak or a, I shouldn't say a weakness, but at least a challenge for an assistant coach becoming a head coach could actually be a strength or an advantage here for Adam Foote and Elias Pettersson.
He's just such a unique player. It's like, so from everything we hear, it's just like you have to handle him differently than other players. And, mm-hmm. for a lot of fans, I know that's frustrating to hear that he has to be, you know, treated differently than other players. But at the same time, if you're a Canucks fan looking at this, you're like, you know what? Whatever you have to do to get him back to being Elias Pettersson.
But also, every player has to be treated differently. Yeah. And this is one of the things that's difficult about coaching that makes it hard to be a good coach in professional sports. There has to be a baseline of accountability where everyone is accountable for certain things. But then every person's different. Every player is different. Every human being is different. There's going to be things that work with some players that don't work with others. I think it's way more complex than just, well, some guys need a pat on the back, others need a kick in the butt. Yeah, definitely. That's part of it. But there's way more to it than that. And Adam Foote, again, I thought this was very revealing. One of the things he said about taking the job is he's had the chance to build these relationships. He knows how certain guys tick. He knows mm-hmm. what makes them work, what's going to work with them. That is a huge, huge element to being a coach. Like, you can have the greatest, most innovative, incredible system of all time. If you're not able to manage those relationships and press the right buttons for different players, then it's not going to mean anything. So to your point, yeah, maybe it sounds frustrating, but of course Elias Pettersson needs to be treated differently than Tyler Myers. And of course Tyler Myers needs to be treated differently than, you know, whoever, defenseman Elias Pettersson, mm-hmm. Elias Pettersson. Like, they're different people. Everyone's going to be needed to be treated a little bit differently.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think you mentioned the Adam Foote, like the first thing he said, like his introductory statement was he thinks he has an advantage in having time to develop relationships with players and the staff, and he is familiar with what makes these players tick and mm-hmm. how to go about having a solid relationship with these players. And I do think that is an advantage. Like, the one thing I've been talking about is, you know, I don't know how inspired I am about the choice in Adam Foote as head coach. I'm willing to save judgment for whatever happens next season. But one of the things I do view as a positive is that he does have these built-in relationships with the players. And we'll see if he can transition from being a good guy to maybe being a bit more of a bad guy. I do also wonder the impact of the assistant coaches. Like, do you bring in more of an intimidator as a as an assistant coach?
Someone who's a little harder, especially if you're looking for someone with previous head coaching experience potentially as well. Yeah,
exactly.
If so, that could be part of it.
That to me is like, that's going to be the interesting thing, how this coaching staff rounds out, because I think that's going to shape a lot of how I view what the Canucks are going to be this season.
This text comes in: having someone that believes in you is huge. Of course it can change, Petey. And this one says, Adam Foote doesn't have to change and be an intimidator. As you said, how much does he have to adjust now? There's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period, but if your strength is having that rapport with players and being able to build those relationships, and as he said, you know, joking around with Quinn Hughes, right? That's something he really enjoyed. You don't want to completely throw that stuff out, right? Just because you're the head coach now. And that's going to come off as phony also. If you completely change your personality because you're the head coach, it's like, who the hell is this guy?
It's like if Cam came in and he was like, you know what, guys? I'm going to be mean now.
Really cracking the whip?
You can't do this. But I think of someone like John Cooper, who to me is like the best coach in the NHL. I would love if he coached the Vancouver Canucks. Does he feel like an intimidating guy?
No, but I'm sure he can get down to brass tacks with players when he needs to. Because you have to be able to do both.
That's the point. Is like Adam Foote does feel like a guy who can straddle the line of like,
sure,
hey, he's your friend, he's a good guy, but also if you're not performing to the level you need to, I do think he can be both. And I do think that's the other thing we kind of lose in this is like, you mentioned, hey, you can't to help a player, you can't just, it's not as simple as a pat on the back or tough love. It's the same as like, you can't just be a good guy or a bad guy. You have to do both.
Yeah. You have to be a part of a bad guy. At least you got to have a little bad guy. Got to be a little bit of a jerk. Yeah, there's probably some truth to that. Reg texts in, no coach can motivate Pettersson. All the blame goes on Pettersson. It's Pettersson. It's Pettersson. It's Pettersson. I'm tired of hearing anything else. He's a soft, selfish player. On the other side, C-Dog texts in, hopefully now Petey feels like the coach believes in him. I'm like, maybe talk. Did he can turn it around? You only work so hard when you feel like your boss doesn't like you. I definitely think towards the end of the Rick Tocchet tenure, as I said to Drance, like it was becoming increasingly hard to ignore, but the relationship felt unworkable.
Frustration.
It went from being subtext to just text to like, oh wow, Tocchet's really, really frustrated with Elias Pettersson. And who among us hasn't been really frustrated with Elias Pettersson? I understand it, but this is one of those things where it doesn't even have to be anyone's fault, but sometimes the relationship is just kind of too damaged and it's too hard to go forward with that. I wonder how much of a role that played in Rick Tocchet leaving the organization. But that's kind of where I'm getting at with, it's not absolving Elias Pettersson of his responsibility in this situation, which I think is massive, to wonder if a different approach could make a difference. And to wonder specifically for me if just having a new voice, a new guy, someone else delivering the message, maybe delivering it a little bit of a different way. I get the reaction people hear and say, oh, come on, you're making 11.6 and you need a different message. I don't get it either. And I wish it wasn't the case.
It would be so much simpler.
But guess what? If that's what it takes, that's what the Canucks are going to do, because they need to find a way to turn him back into a positive asset for this team.
Especially because, you know, the bigger conversation we've been having essentially since Jim Rutherford had the end of season availability was, okay, how do you make Quinn Hughes happy? How do you get Quinn Hughes to stay in Vancouver? And I think probably the biggest part of that is Elias Pettersson getting back to the level Elias Pettersson should be at.
That would really help.
If he gets back to being a 100-point center, clear top line center, and you add pieces around that, Quinn Hughes can look at it and be like, you know what? Okay, the defense is good. Like, the team's in a good spot if Pettersson bounces back. And that's why I feel like every show on the station says it. It all comes back to Elias Pettersson.
Yeah.
Like, you talk about Quinn Hughes and his future, comes back to Elias Pettersson. The job Adam Foote does and what we think about him as a head coach probably comes back to Elias Pettersson.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but it is what it is at this point. We kind of have to work around it.
Reg makes a good point. Pettersson has had, what, 4 new coaches in 5 years? How many new voices does he need? It's fair. And I reference the transition from Green to Boudreau. Very similar fall off in the last stages of the Travis Green tenure here, where Pettersson looked like a shell of himself. Then Under Boudreau, he gets going, continues that form for the first like 80 plus games of Rick Tocchet's career as head coach, and then completely falls off the map. It's a worrying pattern. It also brings up the question, like, even if it does turn around under Adam Foote, can you have confidence that it's going to be a permanent thing, or is it going to be until the new coach bump wears off?
That's a future problem.
Those are all good questions. The other relationship under the spotlight here, of course, is Adam Foote's relationship with Quinn Hughes. Are you buying? No talk between either Patrick Alvin and Quinn Hughes or Adam Foote and Quinn Hughes.
I would be so incredibly surprised if they didn't at least, like, you at least have to go, hey, what do you think about Adam Foote?
But they know what he thinks about Adam Foote.
Sure,
they know he loves
him. Double check. He's the captain.
Hey, Quinn, you weren't lying to us earlier, were you, when you said you really liked Adam Foote? That was true.
Because we're about to sign him. I do. Okay, so what I will say.
I buy it. See, I buy it. Because I think it's just you don't need to. You know.
You already know.
He's already made it public. He's already made it clear. You don't need to confirm. You don't need to run it past him. It's like, well, if we want to make Quinn Hughes happy, we know he likes this guy.
Yeah. But also, I don't know. I feel like when Rick Tocchet gets let go and Quinn Hughes takes a few hours to answer the phone call.
Yeah.
Before you hire someone, you probably want to be like, hey, just so you know ahead of time.
Well, sure, ahead of time. But like once you made the decision.
I don't know.
You tell him before the news gets out, but I believe that they didn't. Because you know what? I don't think Quinn Hughes wants that. I think he wants his opinion to be respected, but I'd be surprised if he wants to have like final say on things. You know what I mean?
He'd be like, you guys are desperate.
That's a little too much pressure to put on the weight or put on the shoulders of one player.
Potentially. I guess I could see that. I don't know. To me, I would be, I don't, if I were in charge, maybe I am desperate, but I'd be like, hey Quinn, what do you think about Adam? Just before we hire him, just one more check. Is this who you want? What about Manny? Have you thought about Manny? I don't know. Anyway, maybe they didn't.
Yeah.
I can see that reasoning of they already know that he likes Adam Foote, so it's a low-risk hire. I just feel like
again, to me, the Quinn Hughes side of the equation, it's not so much about, okay, we have to hire Adam Foote because Quinn Hughes really likes him, and that's going to make him want to sign an extension. It's more, Adam Foote has a really great relationship with Quinn Hughes. That's going to set up our team to be successful next year, and that will increase our chances of signing Quinn Hughes to an extension. Now, some people might say that's a little ridiculous. Like I said something like this on your show yesterday, right? Like, is that really a meaningful distinction, or are they ultimately just doing it to placate Quinn Hughes? But you heard from Patrick Alvin in the press release yesterday, Adam Foote today, Patrick Alvin today. They believe that Adam Foote's going to have the ability now to come in and hit the ground running in training camp because of the weight he's built up with the players. Quinn Hughes is a huge part of that. And if you already have the captain on your side, that's a big deal going into a pivotal, pivotal season. Somebody texted in earlier, how much is management on the hot seat? We can get into that in the next segment, but I think that's a really important part of this. They didn't want there to be any growing pains, any transition period, any like, oh, I'm new to the organization, I'm learning the ropes here. They wanted a guy who knows what he's getting into, and that's part of the reason why it went to Adam Foote. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at rogers.com. We'll read some text on the other side. By the way, Yannick Hansen joins us at 1:30 on the show here. So some text next. Yannick Hansen at 1:30 here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, guest host Josh Elliott Wolf here on the show for today. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Stapp. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll go into the text line here in just a second. I do want to mention Canucks president of hockey operations Jim Rutherford will be on the station later in about 3 hours with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah on Canucks Central. Woo-hoo-hoo. At 4 o'clock, making his triumphant return to the airwaves here in Vancouver.
I don't think we've talked to him.
It's the Bruce Boudreau interview, right?
Yeah, wasn't it? So.
And that was the one where he's like, I got to stop doing this. And now,
guys,
he's
I am talking
back.
Too much.
He's got the taste for it again. He's back on the airwaves here.
He did some warm up hits, too. So now he's.
This man just loves podcasts. Just loves the medium of speaking into a microphone. And for that, I say thank you, Jim Rutherford. So looking forward to hearing what Rutherford has to say about the hiring of Adam Foote, Tom Volander deal, everything happening around the Vancouver Canucks right now. Some texts coming in here, 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big Lunch texts in. Foote has decided to run the power play himself. Hughes, Hronek on the point, Myers, net front.
Okay, let's hear him out.
No.
Myers, net front?
We absolutely do not know. Have I ever talked about this? That's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Is it?
When people are like, put the big defenseman in front of the net. It's like,
well,
no.
Well, I worked with Dustin Byfuglien.
Absolutely not. We are not doing that. It's never a good idea. Remember the Bruins were doing that with Chara? And it's like, you know he has the hardest shot in the league, right? Yeah. Like, the hardest shot in hockey history.
See, but that's a situation where it's like, you're dumb and you should put him back there. Tyler Myers just isn't on the power play.
You still have to make plays, though. Like, every forward on the team has to be able to handle the puck and make plays on the power play.
To be clear, I don't really want this, but I'm here for the fun of it.
I always hate it. But anyways, a joke from Big Lunch, obviously. But I do think it gets to an idea that fans were already dissatisfied with the offensive philosophy, whether that's power play or 5-on-5, that they saw under Rick Tocchet. Now you're hiring a shutdown, career shutdown defenseman, an elite shutdown defenseman in the NHL. Over, I think he played more than 1,100 games in the NHL, won a couple of cups, gold medal. That was his thing. He even made a joke about it himself today, right? Oh, yeah, I was such a great offensive player as a defenseman. There's a concern that, is this going to be even worse for what the team does offensively? It's going to be a very negative style where the, you know, there's no freedom, there's no creativity, all of that. I thought Adam Foote had a really interesting answer about that earlier today, where he basically said, yeah, I was a shutdown defenseman, and that's where he made the joke about how little he scored, how little he produced. Although I got to say, for a shutdown guy, I mean, he was clocking, you know, 30 points here and there, yeah. 20 plus points. Like, he was doing just fine. Anyways, for a defenseman with no power play time, don't sell yourself short, Adam Foote. Anyways, as he pointed out, well, what that meant was he was sharing the ice with the other team's elite offensive players every night. And he was doing that in the playoffs. He was doing that in the Olympics. That was his job, to go out there, figure out what made them great, and try to take it away. And the natural kind of inference he was making there was, well, if you know how to defend those guys, you also understand what makes teams dangerous offensively, what makes great players dangerous offensively, and you should be able to bring some ideas to the table. And this will depend also, of course, on who they hire as the offensive guy, right? Mm-hmm. The other guy to be on the staff, what ideas will he have? How much say will he have? I mean, I think when you think about how much influence Adam Foote has had on the defensive side of things, if they can find an offensive coach who is able to have a similar level of influence on the forwards, that could be a very big deal. But one of the things I like, Adam Foote's answer was, at the end, he said, you know, I've got a lot of ideas about it, which was very different than the kind of rubber stamp of there's nothing we need to change. You know, we're just going to roll it back. Same thing, same system. At the very least, he's open to trying new things. He's open to say, okay, we're going to talk to the staff. We're going to go to the drawing board. We're going to figure out what we can do on the offensive side of things. Now, I think Rick Tocchet probably would have been willing to do that as well, once you get past this kind of disaster of a season and get some runway. But I like that answer from Adam Foote, you know, acknowledging, yeah, I was a shutdown defenseman, but that gives me some strength in how I see the game. I'm going to talk to my staff, and we're going to have some ideas to try to figure this out. I think that's exactly what you wanted to hear, realistically, what you could have heard from Adam Foote on the question of the offense today at this presser.
Yeah, saying he knows what worked against him as a defenseman, what gave him issues, and also goalies, what gave them issues. I do like, I do feel like a lot of it is going to come down to whoever the assistant coach is that runs most of the offense. But it is interesting. It's an interesting way to go about it. And I think them working in tandem, whoever they bring in as the offensive guy, would be it, like, that. That's the best way to go about it, is throwing ideas around. And you know, one thing that Tockett mentioned a lot was that they kind of have a round table approach to things.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if that's something that's going to carry over from coach to coach here, especially with Foote's inexperience of, like, hey, I'm welcoming ideas. I'm open to anything. This is a group approach to trying to figure out this offense.
You kind
of
have to be really open, right? When you're a rookie head coach.
Could you imagine? He's like, I got my ideas,
guys,
and I'm not listening.
I'm perfect. I know everything. You guys just shut up.
Who did they hire?
Do what
me.
I tell you. That's right. There's a reason. There's a reason they hired me. No, you have to be willing to try things. You have to be willing to listen to certainly your staff, especially if it's a guy with way more experience than you. But you know, and as he said, we just want to get the right guys. We want to get the right fits, the best options possible. Maybe that's someone with a lot of experience. You'd certainly like it to be in an ideal world, but ultimately they want to hire the best assistant coaches, and you're hiring them for a reason. You're hiring them because you think they have valuable ideas to bring to the table. So you have to look for ways to incorporate that into what you're doing. Chris and Duncan text in, unless the offensive players get better up front for the Canucks, Foote will have no choice but to play shut it down defense. That's from Chris and Duncan. I think that's a really important point. And as we talk about what's going to be different going from Adam Foote, or sorry, going from Rick Tockett to Adam Foote offensively, the number one thing that needs to be different is the personnel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm all for seeing some new ideas, seeing some tweaks in how they do things and all of that. But if the forward group isn't any better, it's not going to make much of a difference. There's only so much blood you can squeeze from a stone, right? And if you're being honest with yourself, when you think about the level that Elias Pettersson was at this last season, once they lost JT Miller, this was one of the worst forward groups in the league. It was not a good forward group. It was really bad. And that has to change, whether it's from internal improvement, from Elias Pettersson, from guys like Nils Höglander bouncing back, Dakota Joshua, some combination of that and external reinforcements. They need so much better, or else it won't matter what Foote's doing on the offensive end.
Yeah, so this is the thing that kind of came up with Rick Tockett, and why I know some people were very frustrated with the job Rick Tockett was doing and his offensive approach and the lack of offense the Canucks were able to create throughout the season. And my thing was like, hey, you can have your issues with him as a coach, but look at the roster. Like, look at what he's working with. What do you expect? What more do you expect from this team? Even if he was like, hey, here's the most complicated, like, creative ways to try to create offense. What's your confidence level in those players going out and being able to execute it? Because to me, it was minimal. Like, especially you mentioned Elias Pettersson being at the level he was at. There just wasn't much more you were going to get from this roster offensively. It was going to come from Quinn Hughes. Yes, maybe there could have been a little bit more. They could have tried to do a little bit more. But even then, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. It all comes down to personnel. And that's the biggest thing. That's I'm interested in hearing what Jim Rutherford has to say on Canuck Central later today about how do you go about getting better offensively. Because to me, Adam Foote can have the best ideas. He can bring in a guy who's super creative offensively. It's not going to matter unless you get two or three legitimate top six forwards and Elias Pettersson bouncing back to the level he should be at.
Bo from Burnaby texts in, boys, we had the worst case scenario outcome on every single avenue other than Quinn. Oh, Pugh Suter, Kiefer Sherwood. There's some other guys in there, Kevin Lankinen. But I take your point. He says expecting 20 goals out of Hoggy or Joshua isn't outlandish. And I agree with that. And they both did it the year before, right? There's every possibility they could do it again. You still need the difference makers at the top of the lineup. But again, my point, like, I don't think it was Rick Tockett's fault that Nils Höglander underperformed this year, or that Dakota Joshua, obviously we know Dakota Joshua's circumstance. I think it was very understandable why he had the season that he did. So yeah, there's absolutely reasons to look at individual players offensively for the Canucks and have some level of optimism that they're going to be able to bounce back and they're going to be a lot better than they were for the Canucks this year. My point is, it's not a coaching thing, right? So it has to come from the players themselves. Yes, the coach has to put them in a position to succeed, but it has to come from the players themselves. And it's going to have to come from reinforcements as well. Now, on that point about potential offseason moves, does the hiring of Adam Foote, and I think especially in light of his pretty positive commentary on Elias Pettersson today, does that change your perspective on how the Canucks might go about navigating the summer, personnel moves you expect to see, maybe guys that you think might be on the trade block, targets? Does it change how you're looking at the Canucks' plans for this offseason at all?
I don't think so. In fact, like I kind of thought if they brought anyone else in, that would have changed.
That it would change things maybe? Yeah.
But with Adam Foote, as much as I think he's going to have different ideas than Rick Tocchet, he's going to be a different head coach than Rick Tocchet was, I do think in terms of the players they're searching for, there could be a lot of similarities. And I forget who mentioned it on the station yesterday, or maybe it was a caller. Someone called in and was like, are the Flyers and the Canucks going to be going after the same players like this offseason in trade and free agency, like going after the same type of player? And I think that's a fair assumption or judgment to make on what the Canucks could be looking at is a lot of the same type of players. And I know you and Drance have talked about, you know, finding an identity. And mm-hmm. I do think a good identity for this team would be to go all in on speed. And especially if you're not going to have, like, no matter how much work they do this offseason, they're not going to have the most talented forward group. And so if you can find players that fit your identity and maybe are faster with some level of skill, I think that could go a long way in trying to create more, trying to be different than what you've been in the past offensively. I do think when we look at the offseason and what the Canucks are going to be looking for, I do think it's going to be a lot of just fast dudes.
Yeah. I mean, I would appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of wisdom there. We know that's what Jim Rutherford has liked in the past. We also know Jim Rutherford has been willing to, or certainly with Rick Tocchet, was willing to bend a little bit, right? Like, hey, Tocchet had a lot of input. I'm curious what the conversations between Foote and management were like on a player personnel level. Not that Foote, as a first-time NHL head coach, who's still kind of establishing his bona fides in the role, is going to come in and dictate who they're signing, but, and I believe it was Sat today on Halford and Brough said, yeah, they had those conversations. That was part of the process. Player personnel, what's your vision for the team? Where we need to improve? They were very impressed with Adam Foote's interview. Now, I imagine if I was doing the interview, one question would be, do you think you can win with Elias Pettersson?
Mm-hmm.
If he answered yes to that, that probably does greatly increase the chances that Pettersson's going to remain here, but he's not going to be traded in the offseason. But that question of, is an Adam Foote guy the same as a Rick Tocchet guy? You know what I mean? Is an Adam Foote type player the same as a Rick Tocchet type player? I think that's still an open question. I don't think that we know that for sure.
I think this offseason's going to inform
that. It could tell us a lot.
Yeah.
Does he, you know, I think of a player like Connor Garland, who we know extraordinarily highly regarded by Rick Tocchet.
Mm-hmm.
Got 1 year left in his deal. He's extension eligible. Not that I'm trying to say, well, does Adam Foote not like Connor Garland? But there's levels to it, right? There's a spectrum. Is he even slightly less enthused about Connor Garland and what he brings to the team? Does he see more in Nils Höglander than maybe Rick Tocchet did? The answer to these questions could be no, but I don't think it's outlandish to wonder how different their views could be and how much, like, even little differences can make a big deal when you're assembling a team based on how the coach's perspective and what he wants out of a player. So I get it's easy to say, like, well, this is just Tocchet 2.0 and, you know, structure, accountability, it's all going to be all the same guys. I think we should be at least open to the idea, and we should expect, because they're different people, that there's going to be some nuance here to how Adam Foote wants to build a team and how he wants his team to play compared to Rick Tocchet.
I will say, I don't think it's going to be like these big fundamental differences, though. Like,
sure,
we're not going to see a big... The reason I don't think there's going to be too many changes in the type of player this team identifies as someone that fits the roster and fits the system is, you think back to when Rick Tocchet got hired, the amount of noise the Canucks made and thought was worthy mm-hmm. of bringing Rick Tocchet in because they thought he was their guy, and also the systems, everything he would implement fit what management wanted. And I feel like that's part of why Adam Foote got hired as well, is like, hey, management has a vision of what this team is and what this mm-hmm. team is going to play like. And if you're a coach that doesn't have the same vision, you're not going to get hired.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like there's going to be a lot of similarities between Adam Foote's ideal version of a player and ideal team and what Rick Tocchet's ideal team is. But you're right, there might be differences here and there. And also, like teams grow, management teams grow. They learn from things that have worked, haven't worked in the past. Coaching staffs are the same. Like, do they look at what they've done with Rick Tocchet and maybe view this as a chance to turn the page, maybe identify some other players? I don't know, because I still don't think it was long enough to really give that vision full view. But on the other side, this is a very critical offseason for Canucks management and their future, because is there a guarantee that if things go off the rails this year that they'll be back too?
Zero guarantee. I mean, you start to play it out, right, depending on how this season goes, coupled with the Quinn Hughes factor. If this team misses the playoffs in a year where you're trying to put your best foot forward to sign Quinn Hughes, to show that this is a place where he can win, your second head coach you've hired now doesn't get you back to the playoffs, right? I think that's going to be an extraordinarily difficult situation for management. Very, very difficult. We had someone text in, how hot is their seat going to be? I think very hot, depending on the results. And I think this is a situation where the incentives on Quinn Hughes are to try to make this team as competitive as possible. That probably, that I think that definitely gives you the best chance to retain Quinn Hughes' services. But you have to think the individual career incentives for management are very similar. If you're the management group that didn't do enough to keep Quinn Hughes, I don't know how you survive in this city. So I think the stakes are extraordinarily high for them individually, just as they are for the franchise as a whole.
And are you allowed to be the guys that trade Quinn Hughes if you're the ones that...
that made him want out?
Yeah. I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not. Like, because then you start, like, then the rebuild starts. Everybody that's clamoring for a rebuild, it starts if you trade Quinn Hughes. You're forced into it.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. The one thing that does make me... when we get into this conversation about, like, okay, they're like, this management team might be on the hot seat. It might be a very, at least a very pivotal season for them. Maybe we don't need to go as far as hot seat, but very, like, the season is very important for them. How much more likely does that make them to go all in this offseason?
Oh, I think, I don't think you can separate the Quinn Hughes thing from this, because I think it's just two sides of the same coin. You know what I mean? Like, I think they are extremely likely to go all in, but sometimes we think about that with GMs as a very kind of cynical, oh, it's not in the best interest of the franchise. They're just trying to save their job. I don't think that's really the case here, because I think it also makes sense to try to keep Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like,
so
I'm team go all in because you have to keep Quinn Hughes.
I think but I don't think it hurts the argument that it's like, oh man, and if we don't keep Quinn Hughes, we're going to be in desperate trouble. So their path to job security is keeping Quinn Hughes, which is also the best thing for the franchise. So in this instance, I don't really have a problem with them doing what they can to, yes, protect their job security, but also try to do the best thing for the Vancouver Canucks. This text comes in from Reg. The Canucks have to pick up all speed players, use the Carolina Hurricanes model to win. That's from Reg. And I know Drance has dropped the comparison a couple of times. I think he wrote about it at The Athletic as well, of Jim Rutherford's experience with Rod Brind'Amour going from assistant to the coach of that team eventually. It was after Rutherford left. I think Rutherford hired Brind'Amour as an assistant there, though. And Drance has suggested that if Rutherford had stuck around in Carolina, it might have been Brind'Amour's job sooner rather than later there. But you can see some similarities in the profile. Extremely hard-nosed player, right? It demands instant respect because of their career. Successful player. Played a certain way. Has that presence, that authority with other players. I don't know if Adam Foote's ideal system of playing hockey is identical to Rod Brind'Amour's, but when I think about what's the like best case scenario for making this team a legit playoff team, like a top four in the Western Conference next year, what's the most likely scenario? You're probably not going to become one of the most talented teams in the league overnight. That's probably not in the cards.
That would be fun, though.
That would be great.
Yeah, they should try that first.
Probably not happening. Okay. So you have to figure out a way you can get the most. You can be greater than the sum of your parts, that you can get the most out of what you have. That's what the Carolina Hurricanes do better than any other team. They've got some really good players. Don't get me wrong. They've got some excellent players on that team. I'm not saying they don't have talent. But they do that better, at least in the regular season, than pretty much any other team in the league. So if you are trying to like flash fry, microwave, whatever fast cooking method you want to employ here as a metaphor, a least fringe contender for next year, and you hear Jim Rutherford, or at least Drance is saying that Jim Rutherford maybe sees some comparisons between Adam Foote and Rod Brind'Amour. Again, I kind of like that idea of, okay, speed, we're gonna bring in the system, we're gonna bring in guys that can play it. We have Quinn Hughes. Maybe we have Thatcher Demko, who's a superstar who can elevate us at the back end. Can we punch above our weight? And again, not be, you know, one of the five best teams in the NHL, but be like fringe top 10. So we're not just a team that's stuck into the playoff, but a clear playoff team with that formula. That's hard. That's a tough, tough task. There's a reason every team in the league just doesn't snap their fingers and copy Carolina overnight, because it's really difficult. You have to have the right personnel. You have to have the right coach. You have to have the alignment for management on down. But if we're talking about all of the extremely difficult and hard to pull off paths that the Canucks have before them, they got to choose one of them. That might be the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah, and even just from like an on-ice perspective of how the Carolina Hurricanes play compared to what the Canucks did last season, like I know a lot of people were frustrated with how low volume the Canucks were with their shot quantity, you know? Like, and yep, it's always the complete opposite in Carolina.
It's the exact opposite.
They are throwing everything yep at net. And when you talk about being more than the sum of your parts, part of that comes with luck. And part of that comes with trying to maximize how lucky you can be. And generally in the NHL, it might not be the most sound strategy, but getting a lot of pucks on net can create a lot of chances.
Yep.
And if the Canucks adopt that style a little bit more, I don't think people would.
And if you want to say that the Carolina Hurricanes style has low ceiling, doesn't have championship upside, I probably agree with you.
Yeah.
Although we'll see how they do this year. But
even this year, I'm like, they're not my pick.
But do you know how many playoff series they've won over the last like 8 seasons? It's a lot.
Quite a few.
That's a lot more than the Canucks have, let me tell you that. So if you're just trying to get to a certain level, okay, maybe it's not the true Stanley Cup ceiling, but can you get to that level first and then figure out the tweaks that get you to be a Stanley Cup contender? Mm-hmm. I think you could do a lot worse. For as much as people dump on the Hurricanes, they've won a pretty impressive number of playoff series under Rod Brind'Amour, and man, we would love to be having those sorts of problems here in Vancouver.
Yeah. Oh, no, they only won 2 rounds this year.
Wow, they failed in the conference finals again. That would be a fantastic, fantastic problem for this team to have. It's time for One to Watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. On the scoreline or the scoreboard tonight, a couple of teams facing elimination. The Carolina Hurricanes, as we just talked about, looking to finish off the Washington Capitals. The Caps are at home in that one in Game 5. And the Jets are at home, trying to extend their season against the Dallas Stars. And it feels like cheating at this point, but in every Dallas Stars game, the one to watch is Mikko Rantanen. Yeah. He is having a phenomenal, phenomenal run here. It has been a blast to watch. He is such a talented player, unique, the physical tools, the way he's stepping up in the clutch, the top gear he gives that team. It is a ton of fun. So I know you could point to, you know, the best players on the Jets, Connor Hellebuck in net, Miro Heiskanen his second game back. But really, the player I am most curious to watch, most excited to watch on a nightly basis at this point in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it is Mikko Rantanen for the Dallas Stars. That's one to watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. Time to put on your Toyo tires. Whether you drive a car, light truck, or van, Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. Yannick Hansen joins the show next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Josh Elliott Wolf. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And we're now very pleased to be joined, calling in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. And this analyst, Yannick Hansen, is brought to you by the Metro Ford. The Magnuson's family Metro Ford in beautiful Port Coquitlam is Canada's largest volume medium truck dealership. Metro Ford, where the Lower Mainland buys their Fords. Now joining us, former Canucks player, now an analyst here on Sportsnet 650. He is Yannick Hansen. Yannick, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. So Adam Foote, new head coach of the Canucks, I believe you guys crossed over a few years, start of your career, his, end of his career in the NHL, and that would have been in the old Northwest Division. Did you have any run-ins in the corner in a puck battle with Adam Foote?
Oh, yeah, that's so far back. But he would have been one of those ones where you say, like, the last of a different generation kind of thing that played. So very, very limited. He was obviously at the tail end, and I was just peeking in kind of thing. So no interactions there that stands out.
Yeah, fair enough. As you said, it's a while ago now. So Adam Foote comes in as the assistant to Rick Tocchet. Now he steps up and takes over the head coaching job. From a player's perspective, how is the relationship with an assistant different than it is with your relationship with the head coach? And how much of an adjustment is that going to be for Adam Foote with this promotion?
It's your body. It's your buddy and your boss. So it's very different. I don't particularly like that when you promote from within, because it's somebody that you joked around with, had a good time with, shoot around with after practice and all of these things, and now he's the guy who's going to bench you, who's going to sit you, who's going to be tough on you a little bit, where the assistant coach kind of picks you up and, oh, talk about your day and what happened yesterday and all these things. So it's a completely different relationship you have with the head coach and the assistant, and now you have to pivot away from that, because you do have to distance yourself a little bit, because you're going to make a lot harder decisions that really impact players' livelihood and stuff like that as a head coach. So you're different. It's a different animal all of a sudden. So when you do it in season, that it's just to the end and then you move on. But now you're promoting and they come back next year, and unless they're ready to flip a switch here, and again, you treat different. You don't joke around with the head coach either, like you would with the assistant coach. So there's a lot of different ways in ways you interact with the coaching staff that are a lot different now.
Would it come across as like fake almost if you're an assistant coach and you're familiar with the players and you kind of joke around like you mentioned, and then you go to a head coach, you become head coach and you're trying to be a different guy? Is that tough for the players on the team to buy into?
Yeah, that's the part. That's the part I don't really like that much about it. I don't know Adam Foote. I don't know how he's been. I just know that all the assistant coaches I had, the relationship I had with them was way different than the head coach. Some of them had been head coaches in the past, and I highly doubt they were the same personality, same interaction with the players when they were head coaches elsewhere as when they were an assistant coach. The pressure is different on the assistant coaches as well as it is on the head coach. Those losses weigh a lot heavier than on the assistant coaches. So it is different, and you do have to pivot here. Because you can't come in and joke around the same way with the players and players with the coach if they've been doing that with him now that he's a head coach. So you do have to change the way you behave and act, distance yourself a little bit more too in that sense, so that when you do have to be hard on somebody, he knows that, hey, we're not buddies anymore. I'm your boss.
We've heard a lot of talk about how much Quinn Hughes respects Adam Foote, how highly he thinks of the coaching job he's done. And as you said, look, it's going to be a different type of relationship. It's not buddy-buddy anymore, but he's the head coach. But from a coach's perspective, and I guess from a player on the team's perspective as well, how much of a difference can it make knowing that the captain, the best player on the team in Quinn Hughes, and the head coach are in alignment? They have a good working relationship. Knowing that the captain is kind of in the corner of the head coach, does that make it easier for Adam Foote to command the respect of the rest of the room as well?
Not really, because they're so individual there. It's
right.
Two players, and yeah, it's good. If Quinn Hughes couldn't stand him and things like that, they probably wouldn't have done it. But again, the player shouldn't pick the coach either. The fact that they obviously seems to have a good relationship and a good working relationship there does make it a little bit easier for those two in that sense. But again, every coach that comes into, or any coach that would come into the Canucks dressing room, their best friend, best player would be Quinn Hughes. You would cater to him. The game revolves around him. So nothing really changes for him. It's all the other ones that kind of have to figure out their place now. And for the forwards, maybe more so, who doesn't have as much interaction with Foote in a day-to-day basis because he is a D coach, now all of a sudden you're going to get a lot more directives from him. So yeah, there's a couple of things that need to be ironed out for sure.
You mentioned the forwards, and the most important one, the one that's going to have the most attention, is Elias Pettersson, and another new coach for him, fourth or fifth in his career so far. And one thing Adam Folt was saying when asked about Elias Pettersson earlier today was that they're going to be there to support him and do what they can to get him to the level he needs to get to. Do you think support and kind of just being there for Pettersson is the best approach when it comes to trying to get him to his max level?
I've heard a couple of different coaches now talk about Petey. Bruce was the one that really stood out to me in the sense that the way he got Petey to play at his best, what he was building him up. You're going to have a great game today. You're a good player. You all these things. And then he talked about how he motivated JT Miller, where he challenged him. He's like, you got to go out and do this. You got to make sure this guy doesn't do that. And that's how, so like, and it's the same thing with Petey and JT. JT was hard on Petey. It didn't work. So it seems like in order to get Petey going, you have to cater to him almost. You have to make him feel good and warm and fuzzy. So if that's what it takes, then you have to support him, because we've seen what hard on Petey looks like. And it's not a good look. It's rough now, because if it doesn't turn around, what are you going to do? You've proven that if you're after him, if you challenge him and stuff like that, he doesn't respond well to that. So you're down to very few things you can do other than, you say, like, not necessarily catering to him, but supporting him, give him all the help he needs, and making sure he feels good, and making sure and everything is all right. And as you can hear, as I'm saying these ones, I don't like the sound of it in my voice.
Yeah.
I don't like the way that's going. I think players should be, they should be challenged. They should step up. And if they don't, they need to be held accountable, regardless of who they are, what they make, or where they play. So you're in a tough bind now, because he is a very, very important piece, probably the most important piece. I'm not saying he's the best player on the team, because he's not, but if he's not revolving back to who he was, this team is going nowhere. There's not enough horses to pull this team into a playoff direction if he's not pulling his weight.
Yeah, and that point about potentially needing to cater to Elias Pettersson, it's one thing to recognize that every player is different and different players are going to respond to different tactics from coaches. But I think especially, for a first-time head coach coming in at the NHL level like Adam Foote, who was an assistant, there has to be a limit to how much you can cater to one player, because I have to imagine other players on the team, and if they're guys that, Foote now is cracking the whip a little bit more on, that could be, I think that could be tough for the players to see, well, this guy's getting catered to, whereas I'm getting constantly challenged and benched and my ice time is reduced when I screw up. How difficult is that to navigate for Adam Foote or any coach really in that situation?
That's the culture. And the culture has to start from the top. And if you start treating players differently, the culture disappears, because now it's okay for him, but it's not okay for me. It doesn't work. So you have to have the buy-in. You have to make sure that the top of your lineup do that, and then you don't have to worry about the rest, because they will follow. But if the top don't, you're going to have a mighty hard time to get the bottom eight forwards to buy in then, because they see it. And then, he plays for himself, nothing happens. Like, why do I need to do it? I'm going to take a chance here, too. I'd like to score that goal as well. Maybe I get out of the shooting lane of that one. Oh, maybe I didn't fit in with my checks there. It's a terrible slope to get in on, and it only points one direction. So, you have to get Petey playing to the level of where he's getting paid, and that might take a different approach in a one-on-one room with him. But on the ice, in the dressing room, and with the team, everybody has to be held to the same standard.
Is there a benefit for Foote for having been here through this past season? Like, if he brought a fresh voice in, they're maybe not as familiar with, everything that went on in a very dramatic season for the Vancouver Canucks. Is it an advantage for him that he was here through that?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. Sometimes a fresh face, different approach, no history, hasn't been. I'm assuming Footer would have been part of a lot of these meetings between Petey and JT and heard all these things, and it's still in the background. You still know, like, I don't know, maybe you just needed a fresh sheet and nobody remembers everything and then don't need to bring up and what happened there and all these things because it's no interest anymore. So I don't know. Time will tell. And the way we will see is the performance of the team and Petey.
A lot of talk also about the offensive side of things for the Canucks. And of course, that was a theme all year, right? With them struggling to score goals, struggling to generate chances. And, you know, I look at that and I think, wow, a lot of that is just personnel, the performance of Elias Pettersson, the other bodies they had available in the top six. But are there things that you would like to see Adam Foote change or tweak about what this team's doing in the offensive end and just generally what they're doing to try to score more goals?
No, it's personal, like you said.
Yeah.
The players weren't there, and they aren't there right now. In all fairness, we might have one top six forward right now signed, and that's rough. Besser is on the way out. Petey didn't play at a top six level. DeBrusk put up, what, almost 30 goals? I'd put him in a top six next year, but outside of that, I just don't see where the players are, and unless you fill these holes, and I don't mean fill them with NHL, like with legitimate top six forwards, it's going to be more of the same. If production aren't there, this team is not going anywhere, and it doesn't matter which way Foote wants to play or how he wants them to attack. If the players aren't there to generate the chances to tilt the ice, it doesn't matter.
Just generally, Yannick, from a player's perspective, when there's a coaching change and whether it's an assistant stepping up or someone coming in from outside the organization, you know, especially a change, not in season, but this is early in the process, early in the summer for the players. What's the reaction from a player? Does it affect how you approach the summer? I mean, does it put everyone on their toes a little bit thinking, man, I better come in with a really good training camp here to impress the new guy?
I hope that's not necessary. I hope they have a really good summer and come in great shape, regardless of who's coaching or if it's guy coming back or new guy. The only thing I can think back to was when Willie was hired. That was early in the summer as well. But it didn't really change anything for me. It just meant, okay, I haven't met the new boss, if you will, for the first 3 or 4 months he was hired because I was away in the summer and training elsewhere, and it wasn't until you showed up in Vancouver that you actually met him for the first time. I spoke to him once, maybe twice over the summer, but yeah, no, very little interaction. So no, I don't think it shouldn't change any approach to anyone in terms of how they prepare themselves for the next season.
You mentioned needing to improve the forward group, and that's a clear focus for Canucks management. They mentioned it as well yesterday. They did sign top prospect Tom Willander to an entry-level contract, and all of a sudden you look at the defense and you have like 7 or 8 guys you can trust to play in NHL games. Is that a position of strength that the Canucks can pull from or should pull from to try to address their forward group?
Yeah, now are you robbing Peter to pay Paul?
Again.
We finally got the D's four figured out, right? It was the D that wasn't figured out, but we had the forward figured out. Then we started trading the forwards, and now the D's are figured out. Like, you can't do it. I mean, like, you had so much depth up front. You go a couple of years back, Bull, Petey, and JT, an abundance of wealth at center there. You trade one of those guys. You fill out the second hole behind Quinn with Hronek. You do the same with JT, but now you're missing the I know you fixed one spot, but you create a hole in another. So again, it's great that the D's seem set. I don't think you need to do anything there. You mentioned there's quality enough. There's different attributes all over the lineup on the D side. But how are you going to fix the forwards now without taking away from the D core? Yeah, there's the UFA, but as soon as we start mentioning trades, you can be damn sure that Tom Willander is one of the first names that get mentioned right there, and you're moving him. Are you moving the 15th overall draft pick? Then where is the next player that's supposed to fill an empty spot coming from? Another trade? I don't know. That's where I find it hard to see how they're going to fix the forward group, because it's not just a winger or two we need to be concerned about. It's it could be potentially a number one center, a number one winger, and a number two winger, and a number four winger that you need to fill, and then hope that Petey turns out to be a number two center or a number one center. It's so many questions I'm spitting at you guys here right now. And in order to get all these ones right, you have to get so lucky. And I don't see the players in the UFA either. So let's say, okay, these four players we theoretically need, let's say they all decide they want to come to Vancouver. I'm not sure I could pick four players that these ones would instantly make this team a threat to Edmonton.
Yeah,
and that's where we're trying to get to, right? Mm-hmm. We're not looking to finish 15th or 14th and get a wild card spot and then get blown out like LA or one of those teams. No, we're looking to compete. And yeah, you can get lucky. And they have made good signings in the depth chart in the past. Joshua, Kiefer, and these guys that came in on depth, Suter as well, that came in and played above their weight. So they have found depth pieces, but depth pieces are a whole lot easier to find and get lucky on, because you can throw out four darts, and if you hit one of them, great. And if the other three don't, well, move on. You go out and you sign somebody to 6 years at $6-8 million, and they don't turn out, you're in trouble. So you have to get very lucky.
Yeah, there's a lot to do. There's no doubt about that. Yannick, thanks as always for joining us. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
That is Yannick Hansen, former NHL player, former Vancouver Canuck, of course, now a regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. And to what Yannick was just saying there at the end, Jay and Delta text in. I'm somewhat confused. The Canucks' best players had one of the worst years. The Canucks ended up with 90 points. They would have made the playoffs in the East. They didn't have that bad of a year as per wins and losses. Personnel-wise, they had injuries and all kinds of stuff. Why are we so doom and gloom? I think there's a couple of reasons, because I think what Jane Delta says is fair enough. I don't think anyone doubts that there's the potential to be a playoff team here, even to be a 98 or 99 point team for the Vancouver Canucks. But if you had gone back a year in time, right, they just wrapped up a 7-game series against the Edmonton Oilers, and you made the Stanley Cup contender case for the Canucks, it would have started, yes, with Quinn Hughes, but the next item on your list would have been JT Miller and Elias Pettersson down the middle. JT Miller's gone. We have no idea what to expect from Elias Pettersson. So the calculus of the team has changed. Then you go, Brock Besser might not be back. Hugh Suter was a huge player for them this year. He might not be back. So, yeah, if you just returned the team that started training camp last year for the Canucks to the ice next year, you could say, oh, but they'll probably be a playoff team. But that's not going to happen. There's going to be significant changes. We've already seen significant changes. And to Yannick's point, the bar isn't, can this team make the playoffs? If they're more healthy and some guys bounce back, can they make the playoffs? That's not the bar. I think everyone knows, yeah, that's true. The bar is, as he just said, can you threaten Edmonton in a playoff series? Mm-hmm. And I know people will say, yeah, they went to game 7 against them. That's true. But again, that team's gone. That team's not coming back.
There were a lot more pieces on that team than there is on this
there
team.
There are. There were. And that was with JT Miller playing incredibly well. Brock Besser, until game 7 of that series, unfortunately, was extremely clutch. Elias Lindholm, Nikita Zadorov, you go down the list. Like, that team's gone, and it's not coming back. What can you do to get back to that level with the departure of JT Miller, potentially with the departure of Brock Besser, with the uncertainty around Elias Pettersson? Everyone has come to the same conclusion, which is you need a massive influx of talent in your top six to be a Stanley Cup contender, and that's where the doom and gloom comes from, because that's just an extremely hard thing to do. That's very, very difficult to accomplish.
And I will say, as much pressure as we put on this offseason and trying to find players that fit that, you don't necessarily need to do it all in one offseason. You know what I mean? That would be amazing if you could find all these pieces in one offseason that get you to Stanley Cup contender status. But realistically, if you can take a step back to, you know, where you were last season might be a high bar. But if you can get to a 100-point team, and then next offseason you find some more pieces that fit into that. Now, obviously, the Quinn Hughes part of this makes it a little more complicated. How big of a step do you need to take to convince Quinn Hughes to stay? That's a question we don't really have the answer to. That's going to be the biggest thing the Canucks kind of grapple with all season. But I completely agree with Yannick. and we've been saying it as well, when it comes to trying to improve this roster, is it feels like you're consistently being like, okay, hey, defense is looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Should trade a few of those and get some forwards. Oh, man, the defense is bad. Need to trade some forwards to get some defense.
I love the how popular the expression robbing Peter to pay Paul has become. Yes. on Sportsnet 650. And yeah, now we're robbing Paul to pay Peter back.
Yes.
We're going back and forth.
Peter's a little upset.
These guys are going to be like, what the hell's going on here? This guy just keeps robbing us.
And eventually at one point, you're just hoping that both Peter and Paul are like contented.
Peter and Paul are going to get together and be like, hey, man, stop robbing us. We're tired of it. Yeah, we're breaking even here because I get the money back. But come on. Like, this has gone on
meanwhile,
long enough.
Steve and Ned is
you
like,
have
I have
problem.
A wealth of... I have so many. This is awesome. Yeah.
Steve is the draft. It's like, come take from me. He's like, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not? Well, I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah.
By the way, somebody texted it in as well. We have a couple minutes left here in the show. Hey, guys, I know we're talking Canucks, but can you guys take a minute to bash the Leafs after watching? I think he means Marner and Matthews in a game that matters. Can we all please agree that Matthews isn't a top five player in the NHL? Why is he always in the conversation on the list? Well, he scored 69 goals last season.
That's
so many goals. That certainly helps. It's the most we've seen in an awfully long time in the NHL. But it isn't, and it's interesting how the playoff choker label for the Leafs has kind of been passed around. Yeah. Like early, it was Nylander. Can't win with Nylander. Won't go into the corners. Not a playoff player. Now he's like their best guy.
Honestly,
in the playoffs.
The Amazon thing where they had him essentially mic'd up on the bench, like going at Mitch Marner. Now everybody's like, oh, and he's playing well, but also it's like, oh man, this guy gets it.
Yeah.
He's good.
Then it was Marner, and it still is also Marner, but then it was Marner. Really Marner in the spotlight and his dad and all that. Yeah. Now it's Auston Matthews. And Auston Matthews was kind of, not that he's escaped criticism, because everybody's going to come under a lot of criticism in Toronto, of course, when the team fails time after time after time after time, as they do in the playoffs. But I don't think Matthews has ever been target number one like he is now. And it's tough. Like, you watch him. It's just, there's not a lot there.
No, I do wonder if, like, the season as a whole for him was pretty bad.
He was clearly struggling with something.
Yeah.
So is that just carrying over? But it's hard when it's part of a pattern.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I'm fully convinced that he has no clutch factor, but he's definitely trending in that direction. Especially when you watch, like, Rantanen and, you know, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. You watch all the other star players on all the other teams playing so well.
Yep.
And then you're Auston Matthews and you've scored almost 70 goals.
Like, you know, even like Jack Eichel didn't have a great playoffs this year, but the year they won the cup, he was phenomenal. He stepped up after having some similar questions. Like, eventually you have to step up. And it's just been not just that they haven't stepped up. That was about as bad of a performance you can have in front of your home fans in a massive, massive playoff game. Like, that was just
embarrassing.
It was deeply, deeply embarrassing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it feels like it's going to spell the end, mercifully, I think, of the core four era for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay, that's the show for today. I am back on mini vacation pending the announcement of, like, a Brock Besser extension or something, I guess. We'll see. We'll see what we get here from the Canucks. I'm off. You're on with Lena at the Nat tomorrow, right? Correct?
We are 11 to 1 at the Nat.
Canucks brunch, 11 to 1 before nooner at the Nat tomorrow. I will be back on Tuesday on Canucks Talk. Drance will be back at some undefined point next week as well. Have a great weekend. Talk soon here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.